As a teacher, I find it such a treat to reconnect with a former student and to discover where their life has led them. In this episode, David and I reconnected with Claire Gall, a student from our Saudi days. Claire and her husband, Jamel, teach at an international school in China. The interview covered all five main categories on our information hub. Jamel and Claire shared so many great insights that you might have to listen to the episode twice to take them all in. We talked about some of the big decisions involved when including children as part of the dynamic in teaching and living overseas, including healthcare, how well the school program can support your children, and the location's infrastructure. We talked about some of the many benefits for kids who are raised internationally, as well as some for parents. We also addressed some of the struggles that can arise and some tips for coping with them. Claire and Jamel described recruiting as a couple with children and offered real-world recruiting strategies, such as doing deep research on the community nature of your targeted schools, seeking to balance career opportunities with schools that meet your children's needs, and keeping your options open with a broad perspective. They urge teachers to be ready for their preconceptions and generalizations regarding host countries to be tossed out the window. They also shared these words of caution for parents. Be prepared for some of the schools on your wish list not to be the best fit for your family, especially as you first start your overseas career. Claire is originally from California, and Jamel was raised in Alsace in a Tunisian-Algerian family. They enjoy traveling, grilling, and being outdoors. They have 9-year-old twins, Luke and Leia. I love that. Check the show notes for the full bio and more of the topics addressed in this episode. This episode was recorded on December 9, 2023. Parents and kids, enjoy these gems, and then consider sending us more of your own. We now bring you the delightful, forthright Claire and Jamel and Luke.
Hello, Claire and Jamel. We are super excited that we're connecting. Claire's been such a big help in so many ways. And what's neat for this episode is that we're in the rough same time zone. So where in the world are you?
Hey, everyone. So we are in Zhengcheng, China. It's in Guangdong, also known as Canton.
Ah, in the Canton area. Excellent. And Claire, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well.
Excellent. Great. Excellent.
Saturday night.
We like to start the shows with a going global story. And we're wondering if you have one. Jamel, do you have one you can get started?
Yes. Before coming here, I had an idea about the country. I had an idea that was somehow bleak. I thought there would be no nature. I thought it would be like cement everywhere, big giant cities. And then we arrived here and it was COVID time. So when we arrived here, the airport was a nightmare. The AC was off. We were burning off. There was no water to drink. We almost died from thirst. And then they packed us in a bus and they took us to a hotel. We just managed to move our bags, said goodbye to each other. And then we got put in different rooms. And we didn't see anyone for 7 days. We would like look at each other from different windows that barely opened. And we called each other from the hotel rooms. And from my window, I remember it was a giant window. It was a really fancy hotel. There was a river and a big road. And I would see the traffic. And I saw the big river. It's like, okay. And then when we left quarantine, we went down, they put us in a bus and they started driving us to come where we live. Everything was green. There were trees everywhere. There were parks everywhere. There were gardens everywhere. There was like nature everywhere. Even where we live, there's nature everywhere. We get out. I ride a bike. I go in the middle of nowhere. I ride through fields and it just goes and goes and goes. So that's one thing. All this to say a tiny thing. Whatever preconceived idea we have about a place, whoever has about a place, they will never know the truth until they get there.
Facts.
So when they're thinking of getting a job somewhere, sometimes going on a limb, you just do it. And there's a good chance it's going to be good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the other piece of that to keep in mind too is so much of it is how you approach a situation. And if you're flexible and have an open mind about it and look for what is good about it, that's what you'll see. Mm-hmm. And so I think for anybody coming in new to this lifestyle, expect that things might go wrong, mm-hmm. and consider ways that you can adapt and be resilient, mm-hmm. and welcome what is amazing about the place instead of focusing on the difficulties, because there will be difficulties, let's be honest.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I would further say, because this is a family show, that role modeling your responses to those frustrations, mm-hmm. is huge for your kids and for their, mm-hmm. ability to, because kids are sponges and they watch us all the time, and their adaptability, mm-hmm. is going to reflect your adaptability. And you know, how do, mm-hmm. you respond when things get tough? What do you do? And so I think, mm-hmm. that's something also for parents who are potentially going overseas to keep in mind, is be ready to just deep breaths and say, you know, it is what it is, and let's embrace it, and what's good about this situation, you know, what have I learned, rather than, you know, this totally sucks type of thing. And so I think Jamel, you know, seeing the trees and saying this is beautiful, and Claire talking about the safety, appreciating those things, it's just so clutch for how our kids', mm-hmm. experience will turn out. Do you guys have anything else you want to add that we haven't already covered?
You just made me realize I ruined my kids by driving in Cameroon.
Tell us more.
Because I was like pesting and losing it every morning on the way to school.
Banging the steering wheel, cursing in French.
I ruined them. That's it.
They do mimic us, but they also are very much their own people. As I was singing praises to all the safety, my daughter was sitting and looking at me, and she goes, "But there's snakes on campus."
Oh, my goodness.
There's snakes. So they're us, and they are.
No one ever got bitten by a snake.
Not yet.
Yeah. Okay, good thing. So
I've got to jump in. That's our second mention of snakes. We had Greg Mankata telling a snake story from South Africa, by the way. That was quite the story.
He's in Zimbabwe now, right?
Yeah, yes. He is.
So he's, Jamel, that's Arno and Sarah's head of school.
Oh, okay, small world.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And that's another thing, it's a small world in our profession. So. All your flaws and all your great traits will be exposed, and those of your children too. Everybody knows someone.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. So normally we frame our shows with a guiding question, and then we jump into some sub-questions. So the guiding question for this show is, what are some common experiences for international teaching families? And I am sure if there's anyone out there who has a family, they can relate to the one that you just told us. So first supporting question, let's start with the big picture, and then we'll work towards everyday experiences. So what are some of the big decisions that you have to make when you're including children as part of the dynamic when you're teaching and living overseas? And are there any maybe tips you would give to parents when they think about making that jump in international teaching with kids in tow? Claire, how about you start?
Yes, I think there's considerations for sort of each phase of your child's life, or even prenatally, there's really special considerations that you need to think about and really consider if you're planning to go abroad. I was pregnant with the twins in northern Iraq, and being what doctors like to call advanced maternal age, it was a little bit complicated. I actually ended up having to deliver in the U.S. because in northern Iraq, the main hospital used, the maternal hospital, they didn't have a steady supply of like a blood bank in case I needed a blood transfusion, because it was considered a high-risk pregnancy. So if you're planning on getting pregnant while abroad, those are things you need to think about. And then there's considerations having an infant while living abroad, and just availability of healthcare if you're in a developing country, or the availability of childcare. And then for younger school age kids, there's other things, whether your school has a established early years program. And then throughout their kind of school career, you need to think about the kind of curriculum up until they're doing their college prep. You want to make sure, I would say, you're in at a high school that has, you know, if your child needs AP or if they're doing the IB program, you need to think about the curriculum. In our case, one of our kids has some social and emotional learning needs, and that was not something we anticipated. So we've kind of been learning as we go about the nature and the different types of support that are available in international schools. And if you have a child with needs, you really have to look carefully at the kind of school that you want to be at. Because unlike American public school system or the systems in North America where everything's standardized, the type of supports available at international schools, it's not standardized. It's organized differently. It really varies school to school. I would say those are the main things. And then infrastructure at post, in terms of the kind of flexibility you need to have when you're living in a developing country, thinking about safety, day-to-day life, just small thing. We lived in West Africa and the sidewalks aren't great. And it's not something you really think about if you're living in a developed country. But when you go abroad, these are things that kind of just pop up in everyday life. Like just one day I was walking with my daughter at our last post and she stepped into a sewer. And the sewers aren't like what you have in North America. It's like a grate and her leg got stuck. And she was fine, but she scraped her leg. And it's just things like that. Just different considerations for safety.
Jamel, would you like to add to that?
Yeah, sure. So she focused on the family part, but there's also, I would say, something else people need to be aware of, as we all have negotiable and non-negotiable. And the non-negotiable with time, actually, the limit becomes a little bit blurry because working abroad, sometimes you have to go somewhere you not necessarily want to go, because this is where you get the job, but this is where actually you get the job you want as a stepping stone to end up somewhere else later. So that's also something people need to think of if they're planning to work abroad, because it's not always going to be easy to find the perfect fit for a couple and for a family. So sometimes you end up at the school that you not necessarily want your kids to be at for 5 years, but it's okay for 2 years if they're young, because later on you think to yourself, yeah, I'll be at a better school later. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm adding.
Jamel, that really hits home for an experience that we had with our children at a couple schools. And that's such a huge point that you want to move forward in your career to advance to schools where you're really going to thrive and your children are going to thrive, but it's not always going to work out, especially when you're making that first step or two. So I think that's really huge for people to take into consideration. And like you're saying, the non-negotiables, kind of to write down on paper, this is what we can do and this is what we can't do. And we got to be ready to maybe say no to this year, moving on to that next place. So that is really a huge thing. So many advantages to having children grow up overseas. So let's break it into two parts. What are the benefits, this just being in a school, from the curriculum to the interaction with the teachers to then life outside of school? What are the benefits? Because I think our biggest listeners on this episode are going to be people in their home country going, okay, I've got kids. What's it going to be like? Jamel, why don't we start with you? Take a stab at school and at just life living overseas for kids.
I believe the kids are getting like a huge advantage compared to others. In a way, they're like, I won't say they're in a multicultural setting, but they are in a culture different than theirs. And I understand how it could be difficult sometimes, because when I was a kid, I was like, we had culture at home, but then we had culture at school. And even at school, there were people like me and there were people who were not like me. So it was like, I can relate to that. But on the grand scheme of things, I think it's beneficial for the kids. I won't say my kids are the smartest in the room, but they're definitely the more aware of what's happening around. They're more aware of what happened in the world. They're more aware of things like the environment, social justice, things like that, that there would be if we settled somewhere, in, let's say in the US or even anywhere in Europe, because they wouldn't have the opportunity to see all these things that they've seen. They know what the UN does. They know what UNICEF does. They know how by themselves countries would say like, yeah, we don't have anything, so they get more money from the UN. That's one of the kids said that 2 years ago. So they are bright. Socially, they know more than most kids if you compare that to kids who are just sitting somewhere. So I'm happy. School-wise, on the other side, I believe that the same way we end up in a school, the school can be great or can be okay. It's what we make out of it. We have to supplement. But at the end of the day, we would supplement anywhere in the world. And it would be the same in the US. For example, if we live in a part of town that actually where rich people don't live, and let's be honest, as teachers, this is where we would end up anyway. It wouldn't be a great school anyway. So at least here we have the chance. And schools abroad in general, so far I've seen, the one I worked at, even if the school are not great, the teachers generally are. There are few teachers who you tell yourself, yeah, they're lazy, they don't want to do it. But for the majority, everyone is really trying hard and they're really involved in what they do. So we met plenty of amazing people and we only met few people. We thought to ourselves like, we don't like these people. So on the grand scheme of things, I think the kids are doing well.
I really appreciate the social awareness, and I know a lot of that comes from parenting and what you all are bringing into the home, the supplementation that you're offering. And you all have been in some hardship post, that is for sure. And so look to my two boys, we were in a place that it wasn't a good school situation for them, great teachers, but there was some bullying going on. But they tell me, they constantly tell me, Dad, we learned so much about life and how to handle people who were not kind, and how to problem solve, because, you know, it's a guilt thing as a parent sometimes. So that was kind of my experience. So Claire, how about you? What would you like to add?
Mm-hmm. Benefits, small class sizes. That's one huge benefit. Right now, there's only 5 students in my children's class, which is actually could be a little too small, but one of our children is getting attention that she would not get in a larger setting. We have 25 or 30 students, and that's really important right now for her. So small class sizes, they did Week Without Walls, and they had a great time. So that's another program that many international schools have. When they do a trip, it could be within country, but the kids are older, they might go out of the country for Week Without Walls. Diverse friends. So their favorite playmates right now in class and outside of class. They've got friends from Romania. They have a little Irish friend. We've got an American friend. And last year they had friends from Canada, from South Africa. So that's really exciting to be able to meet people from all over. And the travel opportunities are also great. So they've taken some wonderful trips outside of school. And another thing is the exposure to language. So they're picking up Chinese slowly. And at our last post, they got exposed to French. And Jamel's a French speaker too. So the language is also important. So those are the huge benefits.
Now, for a little change of pace, we're going to briefly chat with Claire and Jamel's son, Luke, to hear his insights about what it's like to be a kid growing up overseas. Hi, Luke. It's nice to meet you. And we want to ask you, first of all, what grade you're in or how old you are.
I'm in grade 4 and I'm 9.
Okay. What's it like for you living in China?
I like it because everything's cheap.
Oh, okay. Like what?
I don't know. I like buying magnets and stuff.
Ah, okay.
It'll be usually be expensive in America or cheap here.
Uh-huh, okay. And how about your school? How do you like your school?
So-so.
Okay. What do you like about it?
Well, last year we had STEAM and we got to build things. And I also like, they don't give us much homework. And we get to learn different language. Well, yes, in the culture and language for 6 weeks. We go to a certain class during the culture and language period, and we learn about different cultures and languages.
Awesome. And is there anything about school that you said so-so? What made you say so-so? What could be better?
Well, I think, like, I want the students to be better and the teachers. Because some other students, they're like bullies. They throw sand at
me. Oh, my.
And then, like, the teachers, the guy who's throwing sand, she takes both stories and then, like, mixes them together. So none of us actually get, she mixes them and, like, makes the answer not what it was. So it gets confused. She doesn't know what it
is. Yeah, that sounds frustrating.
So we call that resolution. So you're looking for resolution of those playground struggles. So one of the cool things about you, Luke, is you're an international student. So what are some things that maybe you think you're missing by being in China and maybe not being back in your home country?
I don't think anything. Well, maybe some things. Like in America, we live close to our family. And we would go to school maybe, and then like on the weekends we'd see our family. But here we don't have any family living in China. But we like to go on trips. And there's some staff that live here and they're really nice to play with.
Right. And in a lot of ways they kind of become your family. That's a big part of being an international family. And then you just hit one of the big pluses, you get to travel a lot. So Luke, thanks for stepping in and sharing a little bit of your perspective. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
That was awesome.
That was fun.
Clearly, there's a lot of benefits to living overseas. And to be quite frank, we would like to present a balanced show so that people can go into this kind of lifestyle with their eyes wide open, as we like to say. So maybe, Jamel, you can start by telling us, from your perspective, some of the drawbacks that we haven't mentioned at this point to having kids and living overseas.
Yes. The first one, obviously, like Luke said earlier, it's being far away from home, far from family. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
There's also the part where actually sometimes we are totally powerless with the kids. When you're somewhere and you don't speak the language and you can't fix the problem and you're lost. And because for kids, usually they think we can fix everything. If there's a problem, they're like, yeah, mama will fix it. Papa will fix it. But when we're stranded somewhere, it's like just today, I was trying to explain something to a taxi who drove us somewhere. And I told him, pick us up at 4:30. That was fine. And then I told him where you were supposed to take us this morning. And he didn't understand. And then he took like 10 minutes in the taxi with the phone. Mm. And we called someone else from school who spoke Chinese. She told him the same thing. And he started arguing with her. It's like, yeah, but what does he mean this morning? So It is complicated. So mainly the drawback is like, if you're in a country where you don't speak the language, some simple things can become really complicated. So that can be a problem when you have kids around because, as I said, we cannot fix something for them. But at the same time, I think it's a learning moment. They see that actually we don't know everything and sometimes things are just tough. But they see us struggling, and that actually is, some people might not be okay with it. I personally, I'm not okay with it. I don't like struggling in front of the kids. I want to be omniscient. I want to know like everything in front of them. Sadly, it doesn't work. So
super dad.
Yes. So there's that. There's also the part where actually sometimes when the kids are sad, they revert to things would be so much better if we were in America, for example. They idealize America. They've never been there for real. They were there when they were like 2 or 3, and then we left. So they don't really remember. All they remember is summers at grandma and doing fun things. But every now and then, they'll be like, things would be so much better if we could only go to America. I was like, because they don't know the truth. So that can be hurtful because I'm not from America. And they never say, Oh, things would be so much better if we were in Tunisia. They don't say that. Or Algeria. They just say America. But at the end of the day, this is what they call home in their heart. So I understand why they revert to that. So it could be hard. It could be hard for the kids. It could be hard for the parents. Again, it's not a perfect world. It's not a perfect life. It's just what makes us happy. So at the end of the day, is it for everyone? I don't think so. But it's definitely for us.
Well, that's good to hear. Thank you for sharing some of the frustrations. Definitely get you when you're not able to fully communicate. It can be challenging. Mm-hmm. Claire, do you have any drawbacks that you'd like to reflect on?
Drawbacks, as Jamel mentioned, it's being far from family. When we want to have a night out with just us, a date night, we can't just drop them off at my mom's or have them stay with Jamel's sister. So that can be hard sometimes. One thing I've really struggled with these past couple years, and I found my groove, it's gotten better, but in the beginning was being in the same school with my children all day. The teacher-parent, wearing the teacher hat, wearing the parent hat. Teacher-parent boundaries, relating to colleagues as a teacher-colleague, and then putting on that other hat, relating to them as a parent. That was very tricky in the beginning, added to the fact that we have always lived in housing with the rest of the staff. So that line between work and our personal life gets blurred. And even now we live on the campus where we teach. So we are around the same people all the time, which overwhelmingly is mostly positive. But if there's a conflict or something my child experiences at school, an adverse situation, or there's an issue, then it can be tricky to really toe the line and separate my feelings as a parent from who I am as a professional. So for me, that has been the trickiest thing to adapt to, I'd say. And the last drawback is fully understanding and being able to advocate for what my children need in terms of the type of supports they need in the classroom. That's been a difficult thing. But like I said, overall, the benefits outweigh the drawbacks. So,
So I'm just going to dig a little deeper into the advocating piece. Is it your sense that if you were in the States, it would be easier to do that?
In some ways, yes.
Okay.
Because the standards and the laws about students with different needs are really clear. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that the IEP, for example, or the behavior plan is always implemented. But if I were advocating for my child in the U.S., I would not have to be as diplomatic, I feel. Because here, when I'm advocating for my child, I'm also still someone's colleague. If there's an issue and I need to talk to the head of school, that's still my boss.
Yeah, that's tricky.
I found it to be tricky, but maybe that's just me.
Well, I can say as a counselor, what you're talking about is very normal, is the person that often teacher parents come and talk to balance out the needs of for the students, but also validating the teacher who becomes the parent and saying, we need to hear what you have to say, and let's take off your teacher employee hat and all that. I'm sitting here really appreciating what the two of you are sharing. It is really insightful. And Audrey, I really appreciated your question there of, and it connects for Jamel in a way too, comparing back to one's home country, what it would be like. And for example, in the U.S., a normal public school, fourth grade, probably 25 to 30 kids. And like you said, if there are several kids on a behavior plan or IEP, what's the follow through going to be compared to a classroom of six? But your school might not have the specialists there to assist. So it is a balance between the two. Let's move on. And we've hit on it a little bit when we talk about community. What are some supports? And Claire, we'll start with you on this one. What are some natural supports, people, structures, systems that you all have experienced in just life as a family and maybe specifically in helping your children?
I cannot tell you how supportive local staff have been in our jobs overseas, just in terms of kind of anchoring us and helping us understand local culture better, just being decent human beings. So when we lived in West Africa, we were able to make friends and have just warm working relationships with local staff at school, admin, cleaners, our housekeeper, who's just a wonderful human being. So that was neat. I wouldn't say we fully integrated, but we were able to really build good rapport with local staff. So I think if you choose to go overseas with your family, like tap into local staff as a resource. And people appreciate it when you show interest in their life and who they are and where they come from. Generally speaking, people are really just pleased when you show that you're genuinely interested in who they are and just learning about local culture. So that's been a great source of support. We have a housekeeper, which we would not be able to afford in the U.S. That's really nice. Currently, we live on campus, so we work at a boarding school. And that is, it's like our own sort of microcosm, our own sort of community. And we kind of have a campus in nature. The kids are free to ride their bikes and run around and climb trees and chase feral cats. So that's really nice. Eat at the canteen 3 times a day, 5 days a week. So, and I think the general nature of international schools is that you sort of create your own kind of family type of support system. It's sort of built in because in some way or another, people sort of need each other.
Yeah. And also, you end up talking to people and being friends with people you would never have talked to before back home. And that's also something that people forget sometimes. You can be friend. Like, for example, in our last job, I met a really good friend. Her name is Marie. She's French. Her husband works for he's an attaché for the European Union. And in any other place in the multiverse, I would have met and befriended with that lady. But we worked together in Cameroon. We met there. We became really good friends. She's a middle-aged French lady, classy. I'm Arab. So usually this doesn't go together. And yet, here we are. Same thing. I met a really good friend. He's a Republican, American.
Oh, no.
Yes. he served in the Navy. And like, again, there is no place on earth where actually a guy like me would be a best bud with a guy like that. And yet it happened. So We meet people everywhere. We meet people that we wouldn't have had the chance to meet back home. Oh, we wouldn't even end up in the same circles. So that's why we wouldn't even actually be friends. So that's also something that people can expect. Will they meet amazing people? Probably not. But every now and then, they will meet someone cool.
So let me connect on that a little bit too. You were talking about the home support, having someone come into the home, especially with small children. But it's the classroom too. Sometimes we just take it for granted, especially in elementary. You're going to have an assistant, maybe two assistants, or if you're running a STEAM lab or something in the middle school, you're going to maybe have support there. And Jamel, I'll add, just meeting the parents of the children you're teaching, and from time to time, you'll get an invite to their home, and you'll go in and really get to know these parents. So that's really huge as well.
We used to join some Finnish parent friends in their sauna back when we lived in Ethiopia. They're like, this is the only Finnish sauna in Addis. So fun.
So that's funny. When we were living in West Africa, I was working with a Canadian woman, and she and I were both real social. We'd go to the parties and go out to the pubs. And whenever we met a parent, and we found out they worked for the UN, we'd kind of corner them and be like, so, can you come talk to our class? It was great. That first year we were in West Africa before COVID hit, I befriended all these moms. I just found my people more than any place I'd ever lived in my life. Former Peace Corps volunteer moms in their 40s who had really interesting jobs, and brought them into class, had them talk to the kids. So it's just, it works out. That's expat life. A post where we've worked so far, the school really is the center of the community. And it's really great to be a part of something like that.
Absolutely. Let's segue a little bit into everyday family experiences. And really, you've been talking about that in more general terms, but are there perhaps some occasions that have led to some feelings of gratitude to you for being overseas? And maybe Claire, you can start with that one.
Yeah, daily life, we're very safe. This is the safest place I've ever lived. And I know there are a lot of strong opinions about how that safety is achieved in China, but we feel really safe here. We feel our kids are in a really safe place. The kind of strife that has befallen American public schools with the violence, that never crosses my mind here. So we're really grateful that we have kind of a close-knit community, and our kids have the freedom to kind of, they kind of have this sheltered but still free roaming space where they can play. So that's something we're grateful for.
That's huge.
And China's so convenient. We can get anything delivered. So it's super convenient. So the general safety, the convenience of delivery services, maybe this is all over Asia, but you can have pretty much anything at your doorstep with a click of a button. So we don't have a need for a car. So that's everyday stuff. It's everyday life.
Jamel?
For me, I would say every day. What I'm grateful for is the fact that the kids, I have the life I had when I was a kid in the 80s. That means like in the morning, they don't wait for us. They get ready-ish. They don't brush their hair, but they still, they get out. They go have breakfast and then they go to school. We don't have to deal with them. They learn how to do that already. After school, I don't see them. They roam on campus. They play like I used to do when I was a kid. Basically, after school, do homework, half an hour, and then I go play until the street lights turn light. When the street lights turn on, that's time to go home. And it was safe, and it's safe now for them. And many kids cannot do that anymore. At their age, they might go to school and come back by themselves, but playing after school outside without their parents knowing where they are, it's not common anymore. So I like the fact that they can do that. I'm also grateful for tiny things. Like earlier I was mentioning social awareness. We're not going to comment about the world these days on the news, but today they were talking, it's like, hey, why don't we eat there? And I said, no, we don't go there. Why? Because we're boycotting it. Why? I just said, because they support whatever. They said, okay. So they know what a boycott is. I didn't have to argue with them about what it is. It was just, it made sense for them. So they have like that global, I won't say global citizen because it sounds too IB, but you know what I mean? They have that awareness. They understand at the age of 9 what boycott is, and they don't fight you on it. You just explain, it's like, okay, it makes sense. I get it. But they will fight you for brushing their hair, taking a shower every day. They're still kids, but we're winning some battles, baby steps.
I'm muted, so I'm laughing and just smiling over here. So much research, as we all know, has been done on moving away from what we call free-range parenting now and what we would call normal parenting, and kids having play, having time to themselves, having the ability to go where they want to go and all that. So again, the theme I'm picking up is just you two are such cool parents, and you're in a place where your values can be followed through with your kids. So I'm just very happy for you all and your children that it's working out so well. All right, let's shift into recruiting. And I was explaining to a friend today about this episode, and again, very excited about it, but talking about what it means to be a couple and then a couple with children and how the dynamic is set up when you recruit. So why don't we start with you, Jamel, on this one? What are just some dynamics for that person sitting in maybe Tunisia or other places in North Africa who wants to teach overseas, or maybe from Canada? What are some dynamics when you all go out and recruit that they might want to think about?
Yeah. Can I be blunt?
Please.
Give it a shot.
You need one of the 5 passports. That's what it is. It's just the way it is. The international schools, I'm not going to say they're racist or there's a hierarchy, but this is how it works. An administrator told me that. You see on search, at the beginning of the season of recruiting, all the 5 passports with English names, let's say, or let's say Christian names, those are the first one to go. And the more you advance with the season, and then more you have like those passports with ethnic names, until you don't have those passports anymore. And this is when you have your shot. It doesn't mean you don't have a shot. But for the big schools, this is what they're going to go for. On the other hand, what I discovered, because I have a Facebook group for design teachers, for DP, and there's 1,200 people in that group. So even if there's 2 design teachers, which is not true, but let's say there's only 2 design teachers in every school, it's still 600 schools. And if I sit now and try to think about all the school I know, I won't be able to name 50. So there are schools out there. There are so many schools. And there are gems for sure that we haven't heard about, like a tiny or good school somewhere that we don't know about because it's not famous yet. What I would say is don't give up. Just try. If you have a family, there are some things you have to think about. Depending on what the teachers teach, that will say whether they have more chances to be hired or not. Specialists come on top. If you're an English teacher, sadly, you're going to have more things to sell yourself than just your master, because there are thousands of English teachers. Specialists, but if you mix specialists like physics, math, design, or whatever, music, and English is fine. But if you want to have more chances to be hired, you need to be a specialist. If not, you will struggle. It doesn't mean you won't get a job. It means you will have to have something to offer that is more than just your degree. And this is when things like coaching come into play. If you're on social media, even a blog about helping teachers how to keep a classroom clean, it doesn't matter. As long as you have something that the others don't, you might actually be more attractive for schools.
Thanks for that. And one of the themes we've picked up in chatting with folks is that a lot, especially of the higher tiered schools, are kind of waking up to, whether you call it the 5 passport system or the name system or whatever, and we'll see how well they follow through. So that's the talk. We'll see what the walk is. So Claire, what's your take?
Yeah, I wanted to add, so after the initial, how does this couple fit into the jigsaw of finding jobs? Some schools maybe financially look at couples with kids as, oh, that's two children who were taking away a placement from a paying parent. But I don't look at it like that, because I really think of our kids as added value to the school community. Yeah. Because they are interesting, they are fun, and especially at a small school, what they can bring to the community, and the fact that probably couples with kids are more likely to be long-termers, not always, but we don't want to just hop from job to job every couple years. Now that they're getting older, we want to find a place where we can stay 5 years or even longer. So I think having kids can signal to employers, these could potentially be long-term employees.
So that's very insightful. I just want to add to that point that these international kids, these TCKs and multilingual kids, multi-experience kids, they really can bring that experience into a school, with a lot more schools being local host kids now. Mm-hmm. That the kids of the teachers can be the real international influence. I'm appreciative of your adding that. And then also, that's a huge point that I think in general, families are seeing is they're going to stick around longer, just as you said, they're not going to jump.
It's true. And I know that was something that the school in Riyadh that Claire was a student at, and David and I were both educators at, had that in the back of their mind when they had daycare at school, and they really catered to the idea of people starting their families and staying on, because they did find that that stability was there. So that's a really good point. So let's just take it a little further. Do you have advice for couples who are recruiting, who have kids, as they look at schools, some specific things that they maybe should be looking for? And maybe Claire, you can start this time.
My advice would be sort of, if you have a child who needs some kind of specialized support, just make sure you do your homework on that when you're looking at potential schools. And be extra considerate of how you balance a career opportunity with or against what kind of environment it's going to be for your child. I think that's the biggest point of advice I would give. And nowadays, like Dave mentioned earlier about how many international schools are with a mostly local population, is to really look at the kind of language profile of the school, because there's a difference, I think, if you choose to work at a bilingual school in China or maybe an international school with local children in India, there is a huge difference in culture based on the language profile. So if your child is one of 5 out of 200 children who doesn't speak the local language, they're going to have to learn it really fast. Or it's in elementary, kids are still pretty inclusive, but the older they get, the harder it is to integrate. Whereas, you know, maybe in a school with a large local population that is English speaking, it might be easier to integrate. And there really are hundreds of international schools out there with a mostly local population, and I wouldn't overlook them. You know, when we first got into this, I had my mind set on, oh no, we need to be at an American international school, or the, you know, whatever embassy supported school there was at post. But these days, there's so much more to the landscape than there was when I was a student in Riyadh. And there's different kind of curriculums at these schools, and I know a lot of parents don't want to put their children in a school like that, but I think they're worth researching, because there's just so many different kinds in different countries.
It's true, and you can't necessarily decide that a school is a fit or not a fit for you based on that, like you said, that particular makeup of the student population. So it's a really good point. Have a bit more broad perspective on things. Jamel, do you want to add anything on that?
Yes, for anyone looking for a job, don't settle too fast. The season is young. People tend to believe that they need to have something by December, otherwise, oh, it's done. But it's not true. There are plenty of jobs that happen after December, in January, in February, in March, in April. Some people get good jobs in June. You never know. Not all school find the perfect candidate early. I remember before we came here, we applied for all these jobs. And then when we accepted the offer here, I heard from other schools what we applied from that we thought were more desirable at that point. And my search associate profile was still activated back then. And I would get the email saying how many jobs are available. And there were just more and more and more. So don't settle early. You can find a job after January, February, or March. There will still be job posted that might be even more interesting than the first ones. Because many of the jobs posted at the beginning of the recruitment season were still up in February and March. It's not like they're hired. It's like there was just stockpiling on resumes or something. So not settling early, that's one thing. Also, if they're looking, there's also something I see online all the time about like what's the average salary in a country. That means nothing because there's no average salaries in most developing countries. And if you talk about the average salary that the government provide, they say that the minimum is like less than $300 for most of them. So the idea is not looking for the average salary, it's looking at saving potentials. And is also being smart about it in the way that just ask yourself if saving this amount of money is enough for you. There's no reason to try to get, oh no, there's a school that pays that much. I don't want to work for this school because they only pay this. Because this is not how it works. You can make 120,000 euro in Switzerland and end up saving nothing. And you can make $40,000 somewhere and save 25 of them or 30. So looking at average salaries means nothing. They have to stop asking online about it. Makes no sense. Asking about saving potentials makes more sense.
Yeah, and I think also cost of living, like you say, it all factors in. What about specifically with kids? Do you have any other specific tips for recruiting when you know in the back of your mind, okay, I've got to factor the kids in?
Yeah, so I would say do your research at the type of community that the school's in. Or what the school's place is in the community. I think that's really important. I think community at school is so important. And big cities around the world, I mean, Singapore and Shanghai and any European city, there's always something going on. There's always expat events and there's plenty of kind of ways to integrate. But in lower profile places, there's some real hidden gems and really interesting communities that might be very transient. But if the kind of soul of the community is the school, that could be a very special place. And you just want to think about if you're bringing your children overseas, if they're young, it's such a neat experience for them to be able to have play dates with local kids. And, you know, be invited to birthday parties and just really be a part of something. And that's the kind of stuff they're going to remember when they grow up. The time they went to the president's grandson's birthday party, Cameroon. And there's also a big difference with expat communities in terms of living in African cities, I feel, because you have the UN and humanitarian presence. And it is really neat for kids to be exposed to the UN families in particular, and the humanitarian families and the NGO families, because they have such an interesting take on life and a really interesting worldview. Whereas if you're in a big city like Shanghai or maybe in Central Europe, their exposure might be more the families in the community. They might be bankers and, I don't know, just kind of regular jobs.
If I may add, also for parents out there who are thinking about working abroad, they should not underestimate the ability of children to adapt to every situation. And they adapt, they get used to things really fast, and it's good for them. And if a kid can make it from a war zone and adapt somewhere else, I'm pretty sure our kids can make it from a comfortable life to another comfortable life. It's not like we're going to take them somewhere where they'll be miserable. That's one of the non-negotiable. No one in their right mind would take their kids somewhere where they're going to be miserable. We don't do that. No one would do that. So the idea is they will find a way. They will adapt. They will find their happiness wherever you take them. And it's part of them being worldly. It's part of them to learn how things are different, cultures are different, and they learn how to adapt. They don't think about it. It just happens because they're kids. I would say it's harder if you have teenagers, because teenagers hate everything and they hate change. And at the same time, they hate when things are always the same. So teenagers is harder for them because teenagers tend to have what they consider deeper and more important friendships. While young kids, you put them somewhere, they make friends. Like just today, our son, we were at a restaurant and there was some Chinese kid playing with his mom and someone else. And they had a ball and he started playing with them. And then our colleague's daughter, she's 3 or 4, she joined them and they started playing. They don't speak Chinese. And yet here they were. They were playing. They were having a blast. So young kids will adapt. If you have teenagers, think about it. You need to check what's available and how life is. Because also there's a thing about the developing world in general, the laws are different or they're not applicable. That means if you have a teenager who might want to party, it would be easier for them to get in a club and get drunk in Africa than they would back home. So that's something they need to think about too. It's not about the safety itself or the country you are in. It's more about what the kid will be allowed to do. And how will they use that freedom?
You all keep sharing so many nuggets of great information, and that last one is huge. And it connects to the idea of timing. When do you make your moves? Uh-huh. And that's so huge when you're talking about a middle schooler and moving into that age of questioning everything mom and dad do. How to make that move, how to do planning ahead of time, how to counsel them, how to help them with the transitions. We talk a lot about that. Another thing, Claire, you made me remember is maybe you're down to 2 schools to get the contact for a few teachers there who have children. Mm-hmm. Talk to them, but really make sure they tell you the truth.
Yeah.
We did this with a school and the teachers didn't want to say anything bad. Mm-hmm. So we got there and it was not a good fit. It wasn't a good fit for them. So that's really huge. And then the third thing I wanted to bring up about the language is this is part of our profile blog post and spreadsheet is what's the language that's spoken in the hallways? Mm-hmm. So you all are going to be at English speaking schools. If it's mostly a host language population of students speaking the host language, your kids, the English speakers, can feel very ostracized and the mm-hmm. cliques start happening once they get to middle school and all that. So that's something to really check out as well.
Yes, we do have that here, actually. And it is funny because actually the Korean kids speak Korean with each other, while the Chinese kids speak Chinese with each other. And then we have kids from Hong Kong who speak English with each other on a daily basis. That's the language they use. The 12th graders, the 11th graders from Hong Kong, they speak English. They do not speak Cantonese with each other. The Korean only speak Korean between them. Most of them are fluent in Chinese, but they insist on using Korean. So everybody feels ostracized at some point here. Chinese people feel ostracized by Koreans. Koreans speak Chinese, but they don't want to speak it. The people from Hong Kong, I don't know why they don't speak Cantonese, but that's what they do. So yes, it is complicated. And there's a dynamic that also I am learning right now because never been to Asia before, never lived in Asia. I don't know the dynamic between the nationalities. So now I'm learning a little bit that they have their own hierarchy in their heads, and there are do's and don'ts. For example, there is some kind of rivalry between Koreans and Chinese kids, for example.
All right. This has been phenomenal. So thank you two so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. If folks want to contact you and learn some more about your insights, let's start. Claire, how could people follow you, or where can people follow you?
So I'm on what my grandmother used to call the LinkedIn. LinkedIn. And that's Claire Gaul. Just look for my name, Claire Gaul. My last name is G-A-U-L. So,
all right. Easy way to send you a note.
Yeah. Thank you to both of you.
Yeah.
Very much.
We feel good. Okay. Yeah. Jamel, how about you?
Yeah. I'm also on LinkedIn, or LinkedIn, like she calls it. Okay, to be honest, I'm not her grandma, obviously. But I really thought it was called LinkedIn, because it makes more sense when you read it.
Yes.
It's LinkedIn.
Sure.
So she was right.
Okay. We'll have to contact them and tell them about that.
So it's Jamel, J-A-M-E-L, Mohamedi Bouzina. Just like Jamel Bouzina, B-O-U-Z-I-N-A, I'm on LinkedIn, and then everything is linked to that. So people can add me, they can look what we do. Mainly I basically talk about AI and design, nothing fun.
What about your Facebook group you mentioned with the design teachers?
Yes, I have a Facebook group I run. It's called the Diploma Program Design Teacher.
Nice.
And it's just for people to... It's a Ubuntu for teachers on Facebook, where basically we just exchange resources, what works, what doesn't work. We help each other. It's just a community. Everybody's free to join.
Excellent. Well, you guys will have to start a Parenting Kids Overseas Facebook group so that people can... Okay.
No, there's so many of those. And when you see what people post, it just makes you feel like you're a bad parent.
Oh, no.
It's just like, oh my God, that's terrible. Like, we could do so much more, but we don't.
Oh.
At least this is how I feel about it.
No. Okay. Gotcha.
No, I constantly feel, that's why I don't do the mommy groups anymore. I just feel inadequate. I'm like, I don't do that.
I'm sure there's amazing things you're doing. Everybody's different.
I don't know. Maybe. Thank you. Yeah. That's very kind.
Thank you guys again so much.
You're welcome. That's it, I guess.
It's been wonderful. Thank you for joining us today on Educators Going Global.
You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and all the other usual suspects.
Please subscribe, like us, and leave a review on Apple and Spotify, and let your teaching friends know about us so we can grow our community.
Please reach out at educatorsgoingglobal@gmail.com and join our Facebook group, Educators Going Global, if you have ideas, comments, or wish to share a Going Global story of your own.
You can also find us on Instagram at Educators Going Global.
Please visit our website as well, www.educatorsgoingglobal.com. All our podcast episodes are on there by topic, along with blog posts, Going Global stories, and our ever-growing resource library. For now, this is Audrey
and David
inviting you to travel,
teach,
and connect with us.